Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
And now a warning, our next story contains some adult subjects and drug references because we're talking about the new film MDMA. Yes, that's the synthetic club drug ecstasy. And in the film, a young woman named Angie Wong discovers it in college in the 80s. She's the daughter of an overworked Chinese restaurant laborer in New Jersey. Her mom left both of them years earlier. Angie gets a chance to escape her working class life and attend a prestigious college in San Francisco, a world of privilege. But when her financial aid is suddenly cut, she uses her smarts and her access to the college chemistry lab to make ecstasy, or X. In this scene, she offers some to a frat boy date.
Primo X, made by my loving hands.
You're the mystery X goddess.
Guilty.
Oh my god, all my friends at USC and SMU, everybody knows about you. You are a celebrity.
But Angie's manufactured world starts to crumble. Ultimately, she'll grow up, get a good job in Silicon Valley, but in college, she ends up a boozy dancer in a cage above the club crowd. May sound like a college version of Breaking Bad, but Angie Wong is real, and this is her story. MDMA's writer-director Angie Wong joins us from NPR West, the studios in Culver City. Angie, welcome.
Thank you so much.
I'm blown away. This is really your life. You are suddenly jettisoned to this high-end school?
Yeah, you know, I think going to college is always a huge transition for anyone, especially if you come from, you know, sort of a more modest background. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of lost my way for a while. It probably happens to a lot of kids sort of from underprivileged backgrounds.
There is that storyline, which is, as you say, very common. But I don't know how many of them can make MDMA ecstasy in the college lab. Describe this person you became as you were dealing with all of these, you know, demons from the past. We see the flashbacks. That, you say, is a deadlift from your childhood?
Yes, yes. Yeah. You know, it's funny, you know, I've been in therapy for like 1,000 years, and my therapist, I remember one of the questions she asked me was like, did you think that you were above the law? Did you think that rules didn't apply to you? And I was like, oh, you're trying to find out if I'm a sociopath. And I thought about it really long and hard, and I said, you know, I think I was just running so fast and so hard to try to get away from myself, and I wasn't really thinking, and I wasn't paying attention to the rules, and I was just sort of blasting along very recklessly.
Well, it looks like there was a stepdad or a friend of your mother's who abused you. She didn't believe you.
No, I think that's pretty common, too. So yeah. I wanted to be pretty authentic and disclose that in the movie and in my interviews, because I do some work with at-risk middle school kids, and I think it happens with alarming frequency to a lot of young women. And often the families are in disbelief or they're gaslighted. We need to bring this out into the light and to make it okay for these young women to come forward.
Well, not only that, your dad drank most nights, very cool to you, you know, unemotional with you. And you say domestic violence and alcoholism are the Asian Americans' dirty secrets, and you wanted to shed some light.
I think they are. You know, I mean, I think we're like a lot of cultures where, you know, you put up a wall and you're like, we don't tell our business outside of the house. And I think that that type of silence, that kind of shame, that kind of isolation is what becomes really toxic. Yeah. So I think it's important to just be honest and have like honest dialogue around it.
Especially it feels as if there's an element, and it might apply to other ethnic groups, but there's an element of you're expected to be the good Asian minority in so many ways. Smart. I mean, there you are in the lab making MDMA. And you offset that with this wild nightlife, you know, sort of refusing to just be that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. There's a lot of pressure, I think, especially in our culture, to live up to that model minority kind of stereotype. You know, it's funny because I'm close to a lot of my cousins, and a lot of them went on to go to medical school. And, you know, they were in Chinese, it's called guai, which means like obedient and good. And we actually, just for giggles, decided to make a list of the most guai to the most buguai, which is the least obedient. And I was the most buguai.
Well, so, yeah, it would seem so. But also, you didn't create this culture you stepped into. You're surrounded by these privileged white kids, largely, who are drinking and snorting everything within sight. I mean, here you had this window into this world, and it's not pretty.
No, it's not. And it's something that I also wanted to explore. You know, I really wanted to present sort of a palette of stereotypes and just peel back the layers to show that there's this solidarity to the human experience. And, you know, going to school with rich white people, at first I was like, I'm sure they don't have a care in the world. Like, how could you? You look great. You got plenty of money. You have like 9,000 bottles of shampoo and all the clothing that you could possibly wear in a lifetime. And it's funny because I've raised my daughter in that type of environment, too. And I realized really largely through her that it can be BS. You know, it's just a facade.
You mentioned you work with inner city kids, and we should say that after your life as a drug maker and dealer and after your successful career in Silicon Valley, you did go on and form a nonprofit called Grow. This is for at-risk middle school kids. In the film, there's a little girl named Bree who the character Angie Wong becomes a big sister to with the Big Sister organization. Is that part true?
That part is true. I would say, though, what I found, and especially, you know, looking at my past through the lens of, you know, a 52-year-old woman, I realized that you really have to be super grounded if you're going to go into that work, because I meant well, but I wasn't consistent in her life. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I try to sort of impress upon people who want to go into this type of work is that you need to be super grounded and you need to really, really take good care of yourself and have boundaries.
Well, but the life that you see her living is also just heartbreaking. A drug-addicted mother, violence in the family. And it also runs parallel to the fact that here you are selling all these drugs and you're seeing a family ravaged by drugs.
Yes, yes. I think particularly during the 80s, you know, I saw crack kind of move in and just burn communities down to the ground. And we see it still today.
Yeah. So there is a point in the film, and I don't want to give it away, but there's a terrible thing that happens. What you're doing, yeah, you're a legend, and isn't it great? All the college kids come to you for their ecstasy, and this is really true. But this is also a dangerous world of underground drugs you descend into. There's a very violent scene. You've told us it's not real, although someone like the character who dies in the scene did die after college. The point is, the drug underworld kills. The drug ecstasy can kill. This dangerous world that Angie Wong is getting deeper and deeper into, you know, hurts people.
It does.
How'd you stop?
Well, it becoming illegal was a big motivator.
By the way, what's the statute of limitations on all this that we're talking about?
I know my lawyer's always like, be careful what you say. But it wasn't illegal at the time. So now there was a piece of me that knew that, you know, one day I wanted to, like, have a daughter or a child and, you know, have a nice life and be respectable. And I knew that if I continued on down that path, that there was no way. And that, honestly, I mean, I say this often, I'm a girl who by rights should be dead probably 100 times, 100 different ways. So I think that there was that little voice that's probably connected to the rest of the universe or, you know, whatever you want to call it, that kept saying that she was whispering. She was like, you better cut the doo-doo out. You know, you're going to die. You're going to die early. You know, you really need to get it together and strive for the light. So I think that voice finally won out.
How does it feel to have put it on the screen?
There are like 1,000 different emotions, I think, that I've experienced through this. But ultimately, I think at the end of the day, it makes me feel more connected to humanity. I still will pop into screenings, even though I've seen the movie like 9,000 billion times. And then I feel like I'm a little closer to those people in the audience because we have this shared experience.
And it comes at a moment where people are just shocked that people would want to see a film with Asian people in it. I'm thinking of Crazy Rich Asians, you know, which has been number one at the box office.
Yes.
Where would you say yours fits in this moment?
You know, I think I love Crazy Rich Asians. So I'm a girl who was brought up on television and I very rarely saw, you know, Asian women. And then I think the one pretty Asian girl who I saw when I was a little kid turned out to be a prostitute. And I was like, oh, no, that's not what I want to be. So I'm thrilled to see beautiful Asians who are not prostitutes on screen.
Well, there's that.
But I think that more and more, you know, we're telling stories and we don't have to justify why we're Asian in it. And I think for me, you know, my story, obviously, it's smaller, it's grittier. But it's also, she's a fully fleshed out human being. You know, she's got a lot of different compartments to her life. She's a pretty complex young woman. And I think that she's doing some horrifically awful things. But, you know, she still, at the end of the day, is striving to be a better person. And I think in this day and age, you know, I think that's our job right now is to conjure our better angels to shout down our demons.
That's writer and director Angie Wong. Her new film, MDMA, opens in theaters and video on demand on Friday. It tells the story of her life in the 1980s. Angie Wong, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure. Thank you so much.